Spit that out right now. This is the Superhuman Channel.
The following paid program does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the staff and management of TriSceptor Productions or the Superhuman Channel. TriSceptor Productions and the Superhuman Channel are not responsible for any claims, warranties, or guarantees made during this program.
Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled. From the studio gym where excuses never apply. It's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, welcome back. It's Thursday. We're going to be joined by the brilliant Adele Musa during the first hour as we perform the Subversity Science Roundup. We've got some questions from people who have led to some of the research we'll be talking about. And then during the second hour, we're going to be joined by Bethany Lynn Tyler as we explore her recent publication, The Paleo Prescription, Incorporating Diversity and Flexibility into the Study of the Human Diet Evolution. So that should be interesting. But all the way from Munster, Germany, where it's still summertime, Adele Musa, how you doing?
I'm doing great.
Is it still summertime there?
It is, but it has been cooling down the last couple of days consistently. And in the moment, it's really nicely tempered here, not so hot as the weeks before.
That's how it's. We've had a really unusually mild summer, at least in Louisville, Kentucky, and it's really been pleasant. I really, really like this. Okay, so let's talk first about magnesium. We've received emails from people, some of them asking the same questions. Obviously, there's been some new research out there on magnesium. There is also a big movement afoot, several groups who are advocating that people take magnesium supplements and so on. So what's new in the research about magnesium and sleep, let's say?
Well, the most recent study I have found is one that has actually been published only a couple of days ago, which is one of the few studies that was really able to prove in a really significant way that the supplementation with magnesium will actually increase or improve your sleep in a relatively short amount of time. And in this particular study, they took 46 elderly subjects and supplemented them with 500 milligrams of magnesium per day for 8 weeks.
Was this magnesium oxide, magnesium aspartate? What kind of magnesium was it? Do you know?
The study does not go into details, okay. But I assume it was just standard magnesium supplement. So it was probably a mixture of oxide and carbonate,
okay.
Which is in most of the regularly available magnesium supplements. And what they observed are actually changes that tell us something about the general effect of magnesium on your body. Because one thing was obviously the improved sleep quality, but the other thing were changes in hormonal levels, which also reflect these improvements. And those were especially an increase in the nightly production of melatonin and a greater nadir, also lower levels of cortisol, especially during the night, so that in general the supplementation with magnesium really restored a more youthful sleeping or hormonal sleeping pattern in these elderly subjects.
But now, would this play out the same way in individuals who are not deficient of magnesium, or is this because this particular population is a little deficient in magnesium?
Personally, I would suggest that you won't see the exact same benefits in people who are replete with magnesium, because elderly people are specifically prone to having low magnesium levels. Because their diet has been shown to be lower in magnesium, and they have a problem with the absorption of magnesium and other minerals and nutrients from the digestive tract. So if you look at the study in the elderly, And the beneficial effects you observed there, you will have to contrast that to previous studies on magnesium supplementation in younger people, and especially also in athletes, where you rarely find beneficial results. Most studies actually find null results, and this is also true for the legendary ZMA supplements, which is the combination of zinc, magnesium, and and vitamin B6, which will probably have beneficial effects on anyone who is really deficient in magnesium, but do not really offer any benefits, especially in athletes who usually consume a diet that is that's particularly rich in magnesium.
Right. See, this is one of my concerns also, and we've talked about this on the show before. When you hear a message like this, right now there's people out there who are focusing on promoting the use of magnesium in the general population without knowing whether or not people are truly depleted of magnesium. They just assume that they are because they say, well, you know, conventional agriculture has depleted the soil of magnesium, so you're not getting enough magnesium from your vegetables any longer, so you must supplement with it. And my concern with this is twofold. Number one, we don't know that they're not getting enough magnesium in their diet unless we look at the entire diet in general, number one. Number two, I think we can't be cavalier about replacing just one of these minerals that has an electrolytic capacity in the body because they all depend on each other. You know, if you have a car and you have a 14-inch tire on one side, a 15-inch tire on the other side, and then the back you have a 13-inch tire, and it can't ride straight. There's problems. You have to have the right ratios of these minerals. And in my humble opinion, if you're low in magnesium, you shouldn't just take magnesium. You should take magnesium, potassium, sodium, and calcium all through your diet or however you need to get it, not just the one. Do you think that's a mistake for me to say that, Adele?
No, it is not, and especially you can also have problems with too high magnesium levels, which just as low magnesium levels in the cells won't really show up in a standard blood test. And while there is a significant evidence that low magnesium levels, especially at the cellular level, are involved in the development of chronic fatigue syndrome. The same can be said of too high magnesium levels and deficiencies of the other minerals, which can also have a similar effect. And if you look at the central or at the effects of magnesium in the central nervous system, this is mostly modulated by its effects on the brain, where it plays a very important role in the regulation of calcium influx into the excitatory neurons. It's sort of a gatekeeper, for example, in the NDMA neurons, which are responsible for the production of neurotransmitters or for the conductance of neurotransmitter effects, and they put you in an excited state. So if you're deficient in magnesium, they will be overactive. On the other hand, if there's too much magnesium around, in the cell, not in the blood, which is the blood levels are pretty tightly regulated by your kidneys, and if you don't have a kidney problem, you rather won't see too high magnesium levels in the blood at any time point. But if you have too high magnesium in the cell, you can also experience similar symptoms or symptoms that are similar to those with hypomagnesia.
Right.
Magnesemia.
Which is something that I discovered a year ago or so, when you and I started first talking about magnesium in general. And I was supplementing with magnesium at night to go to sleep. And I ended up changing the rhythm of my heart. And there are other people out there who say, oh, when I take magnesium, it stabilizes the rhythm of my heart. Well, too much magnesium will actually have the opposite effect. It'll cause rhythm issues in your heart. I found out the hard way. Are there any other ways to find out that you're truly deficient? What's the best way to determine if you're truly deficient? Which, once again, you can't just supplement with these things because you think you need it. You really need to find out. So how do people know?
Well, first of all, I think you can supplement with a reasonable amount of magnesium in the, to your diet, maybe like 200 to 300 milligrams per day. This shouldn't be a real problem because your body is pretty well equipped to regulate that. But at the same time, you cannot combine this with avoiding the other players,
right.
So to, especially skipping totally skipping on sodium. And taking in large amounts of magnesium can be a problem, for example. And the same goes for potassium, for, which is supposed to work synergistic in when it's provided in the right ratios with magnesium. But if you miss the right ratio, you are going to have trouble. And people are generally not exactly consuming pretty much potassium in their diet, so this could be a problem as well. And if, when it comes to testing, I've mentioned before that the standard tests of the things that are pretty easy to test, which is serum magnesium or your magnesium excretion in a 24-hour urine test, they do not really tell you about the status of, about the important status of magnesium in the cells. So there's one test that is also available for most consumers, but it's pricey. That would be the test of magnesium levels in the red blood cells. If you look at the literature, the experts are still not convinced that this is the absolute best method to establish your magnesium intake. But the other your magnesium status. But the other possibility would be to be a couple of days in a metabolic ward and to have all your all your dietary intake and your excretions collected, and then measure whether, in a condition where you ingest more magnesium than you need, you are excreting less than expected. This would mean that your tissue stores are depleted. So it's pretty complicated to actually really measure how much magnesium there is in your body. But based on the correlations observed, with what you would expect from a magnesium deficiency, the red blood cell level appears to be a much more precise.
Yes, and that's prognosis. And that's what Dr. Michael Smith talks about all the time when he talks about measuring minerals in the body. He says that the red blood cell is a better predictor of what is on, occurring on a cellular level. So you would concur with that?
Yeah, and it's also interesting to see that the level of magnesium in the red blood cells is very sensitive to stress. And this is not just to physical stress. There are a couple of studies which report a direct effect of exercise on the magnesium levels in red blood cells. But it's also it has also been measured in a test where students had were examined during their exams. And when they were stressed or under psychological stress, they also lost magnesium from their red blood cells, while the magnesium level in the blood, on the other hand, remained stable.
Interesting.
And the magnesium excretion obviously increased. So if you go by that, you would maybe even conclude that, well, they excreted more magnesium, so this means they must have had enough. But that's obviously not right.
Right. Okay, we have to take a break. When we come back, I want to address something that seems to be very, very popular amongst those who advocate the use of isolated amounts of magnesium, and that is topical magnesium, magnesium oil. I want to talk about that when we come back. In the meantime, go to subversity.com, SUPPVERSITY.com, to learn more about all of the topics that Adele Moussa writes about every day. Better than any magazine subscription you could ever find, Subversity. Stay tuned, we'll be right back. Should Altrian supplements be better than a Myers cocktail? Find out for yourself when you try Altrian C and Altrian ME. Using liposomal encapsulated technology, Altrian C's gel delivers up to 200% more vitamin C than pills or powders. The Altrian ME gel provides a high-performance blend of B vitamins and minerals. Make your own Altrian cocktail 100% risk-free. Call 888- 437-6353 or order at feelgoodc.com. That's feelgoodc.com. Use coupon code FREE and ask about a free gift with every order you place. Order today at feelgoodc.com or 888-437-6353. Don't forget to mention coupon code FREE to receive your free gift.
Orbit Nutrition carries over 1,000 of the hottest nutritional supplements, performance enhancers, and nutraceuticals on the planet. And now, Superhuman Radio listeners get an additional 5% off their everyday low prices by using the coupon code SHR5. That's SHR and the number 5. Choose from products like Quest Protein Bars, iForce Nutrition, Iron Mag Labs, and more. Check out Orbit's daily deals for special insane blowout prices. Log on to the Orbit Nutrition Forum and get feedback about the products you're shopping for and get an additional 5% off using the coupon code SHR5. Orbit Nutrition. Fast, reliable, competitive, international. Why shop anywhere else?
Summer's almost here. Are you ready to put on your bathing suit and hit the beach? Age Force can help. Try the Age Force Fat Burner Patch for 1 month absolutely free. The Advanced 7 Keto and T2 formula with sustained time-release delivery make this the most potent and effective fat loss supplement, period. Try it for 30 days absolutely free and see for yourself. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Age Force banner ad today. What do you have to lose other than body fat? Try the Age Force Fat Burner Patch today. Absolutely free. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the banner ad now. You basically live life thanks to vitamin D. It affects every type of cell and tissue in your body. This is the reason optimizing your vitamin D blood level is essential for healthy living. The most efficient way to optimize your blood level is to take the perfect dose. And the most cost-effective way to determine the perfect dose is through vitamin D blood testing. The vitamin D test for Superhuman Radio is only $30, $17 cheaper than the lowest member price. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Life Extension banner ad to order. Electronic muscle stimulation is state-of-the-art for pain management and muscle recovery. Now from ABC Medical comes the Pain Pod. Pain Pod is a professional strength EMS unit and provides 12 therapeutic modes and 20 intensity settings. It comes with everything you need. Small, convenient, rechargeable, and portable. But make no mistake, Pain Pod delivers commercial-grade strength for immediate pain relief. The Pain Pod normally sells for $349, but for a limited time, the Superhuman Nation can get the Pain Pod for only $200, including shipping. Pain Pod comes with a 30-day money-back guarantee. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Pain Pod banner ad today to learn more.
Toothpaste is loaded with toxic chemicals. That's why I use Aura MD. Aura MD is a natural dental care product that is made from botanical oils that promotes healthy oral microbiome while destroying dangerous bacteria that lead to oral health problems. It does not contain fluoride, detergents, surfactants, or any other chemicals. Best of all, it leaves your breath smelling so good, people will comment about it. Right now, you can get a buy one, get one free of Aura MD by going to superhumanradio.com and clicking the Aura MD banner ad. I won't ever use anything else but Aura MD, and neither should you.
Build muscle, burn fat. It's Superhuman Radio.
Sorry, I'm still eating. Haha. Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. Okay. Those who advocate magnesium always talk about the magic of magnesium oil and even Epsom salt and how it can increase DHEA and quell pain and do all these magical things. Is there any evidence that any form of topical magnesium can help get into the body and help to saturate the body with magnesium?
Well, from a scientific perspective, you would have to say that this is all anecdotal evidence, because I haven't been able to find any peer-reviewed scientific study on the effect of magnesium oil or Epsom salt baths on systemic or cellular magnesium levels with a significant or with a even a relevant amount of subjects, and that was in any way really controlled. I remember that back in the day I already tried to find something, and I found one study I couldn't access, which has been done by the U.S. military on some elite soldiers, and in that particular study they didn't find any effect But that was just what I gathered from the abstract. So I couldn't read. Unfortunately, I couldn't read the whole paper. And it's quite intriguing when you try to really find something about on that. All that you will be able to come up with are individual reports of doctors and naturopaths who are using this, as they claim, very successfully with their patients, but really no larger scale scientific study. That doesn't mean that it doesn't work, but it is by no means an established way of reestablishing or of increasing your magnesium levels. And there are, in fact, enough highly bioavailable supplements on the market you could use. And when it comes to repleting the cellular levels, it appears that you always want to favor the organic magnesium salt. Especially magnesium glycinate has been shown to be really effective in repleting the level of magnesium in the red blood cells, and also other forms that are bound to, or more exotic forms that are bound to amino acids appear to be favorable in terms of the actual cellular uptake. And in this case, there is something to be said about ZMA, that the addition of B6 appears also to be of great importance when it comes to the actual usage of magnesium in the cell. So this appears to really have beneficial effects. And it does, however, take some time. Studies, for example, showed that it takes about 1 month of additional 200 or 300 milligrams of elemental magnesium bound to organic as organic salts, and 50 milligrams of vitamin B6 to replete the magnesium levels.
What about, and you know what? This makes perfect sense, by the way, and just real quick. Anybody who goes in the ocean and spends hours in salt water, you don't absorb the sodium. You don't find out, oh, my God, my sodium levels are through the roof. I'm holding water. It makes perfect sense that the body is capable of protecting itself from being invaded by these minerals. Talk briefly about magnesium and depression and anxiety. Does it play a role in mitigating some of these problems?
Certainly does, yeah. There are also studies done in the 1960s already where they put a couple of subjects on the magnesium-deficient diet and watched what happened in a metabolic ward. It took some time until the levels were low enough, but one of the first symptoms in those subjects was depression. They write about one subject that he was usually very active, and after, I think, 2 months or so on a magnesium-depleted diet, he really developed all the typical symptoms of depression. And as far as anxiety is concerned, this is something that can be observed even faster, because magnesium has a very distinct effect on GABA in the brain. And when you're deficient in magnesium, the normal regulation processes in the brain don't work that well. And you are generally in a hyperactive state, so to say. So you are always overactivating the nervous system. And this is also part of the reason why magnesium depletion will yield, or will at least precipitate, to insulin resistance. Because you are, in a way, cannot really manage your daily stress in the same way someone could who gets enough magnesium in his diet. And therefore, you are much more prone to develop this kind of stress-induced insulin resistance, which is particularly related to an increased production of aldosterone that has been shown to directly act on the cellular level, especially in the fat cells, which are then no longer responding to insulin and will, in fact, elevate your glucose levels. And
isn't the body trying to alter the ratio of sodium to magnesium at that moment by increasing aldosterone?
It is, in a way, yeah. It's trying to manage its normal mineral levels because by producing more mineral corticoids, but those are not just able to manage the minerals, but they also have profound effects on the stress hormone levels, and the downsides of those stress of those increases in stress hormone are unfortunately insulin resistance. And interestingly enough, the insulin resistant cells are no longer able to assimilate the magnesium in an efficient way. So you have produced one of those vicious cycles where one thing begets the other, and you are in a cycle where you cannot really escape.
You know, it's so interesting, and I there's more to talk about on magnesium, but I want to also be able to move on and cover BCAAs and EAAs, because this is really important as well, especially in the stress area of the discussion. Magnesium and vitamin D, can you cover that on Subversity Seconds? Would that be okay?
I can, yeah.
Okay.
But maybe just very briefly.
Yes.
Vitamin D has a beneficial effect on the absorption of magnesium, and it is on the other hand, magnesium is very important for the production of active vitamin D from vitamin D3, for example. So there is another connection where things get complex, but it's also not really fully understood. But it's important to know that both low vitamin D can beget low magnesium, as well as low magnesium can beget low vitamin D levels.
Okay, two real brief things. First of all, if someone is statistically low in magnesium, in your humble opinion, how long would it take if they're supplementing with the proper amounts and the proper type of magnesium in their diet to replete on a cellular level? Are we talking about months, years, days? What are we talking about here?
I assume it would take at least a month or so.
Okay.
And as far as I can speculate, I would suspect that you will see the initial benefits after 1 to 2 weeks of daily supplementation. And I would not go much higher than an additional of 400 milligrams per day, because just taking too much will also increase the urinary excretion, and you are not just wasting your money, but in a way could also induce imbalances with the other minerals.
And that's my next question. So there is actually magnesium advocacy groups out there. And we don't see sodium advocacy groups. We do see calcium. We see calcium because that's the medical orthodoxy pushes calcium on us. But we don't see potassium. Is this a mistake to advocate the focus on one of these minerals and not the other three as well? Is this reckless of individuals to do?
I guess it's based on the false assumption that we are all totally deficient in magnesium. But if you look at the magnesium content of some foods, you get 25% of your daily need if you just consume one large baked potato. So it's not the case that anyone who is following a whole foods diet is going to be magnesium depleted. So in general, I would say it's really a problem that is totally underestimated with all those recommendations. That first of all, you cannot say everything fits for everyone. And on the other hand, we are always picking just a particular nutrient we think is important and overlook that it is only important or it's only working in the right ratios. And we will see that in the next segment when we're talking about BCAAs
yes,
as well.
Yes. Okay, so you can get on Subversity Seconds tomorrow more additional interesting things about magnesium, as well as magnesium's effect on the hypothalamic testicular pituitary axis. But we're going to change it up. You're going to want to really listen hard, because the discussion is going to be very, very counterintuitive right now and countercultural when we look at supplementation with free-form amino acids. You're listening to the Subversity Science Roundup. You're getting smarter by the moment. Visit subversity.com. We'll be right back.
Usually something for nothing is worth nothing, but go to superhumanradio.com and click the Life Extension banner ad to get a one-year Life Extension Foundation membership free, plus a $25 product credit. So what does that buy you? Cutting-edge information, knowledgeable health advisors, huge discounts on blood tests and supplements. Want to stay younger and healthier longer? Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Life Extension banner ad and become a Life Extension member now. No cost, no obligation, no kidding. If you're taking more than one nutritional supplement, stop. Simplify your supplementation with Bio Superfood, the most advanced nutritional whole food you can buy. Even Olympic athletes have discovered Bio Superfood from BioAge.com. You take just one nutritional supplement to help the brain with focus, memory, clarity, and mood. Bio Superfood has zero toxicity. It is safe with no contraindications. Learn more at BioAge.com or call 877-288-9116. Mention Superhuman Radio and get a 10% discount. You can also go to SuperhumanRadio.com and click the BioAge banner ad. Enter promo code SHR for a discount.
Could Altrient supplements be better than a Myers cocktail? Find out for yourself when you try Altrient C and Altrient ME. Using liposomal encapsulated technology, Altrient C's gel delivers up to 200% more vitamin C than pills or powders. The Altrient ME gel provides a high-performance blend of B vitamins and minerals. Make your own Altrient cocktail 100% risk-free. Call 888-437-6353 or order at feelgoodc.com. That's feelgoodc.com. Use coupon code FREE and ask about a free gift with every order you place. Order today at feelgoodc.com or 888-437-6353. Don't forget to mention coupon code FREE to receive your free gift. AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your questions. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn. Teach. Lead. I usually avoid protein bars because they're generally just candy in disguise. But that's all changed now. With Quest protein bars, we can enjoy dessert again without the guilt. With 20 grams of whey isolate protein, tons of prebiotic fiber, no sugar added, and only 2 to 6 grams of active carbohydrates per bar, Quest bars will keep you full and lean. I've never endorsed a protein bar before because I simply didn't trust them. That's all changed with the Quest bar. Not just because of what's in them, but more so for what's not. Go to superhumanradio.com today and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad. Start enjoying dessert again.
Summer's almost here. Are you ready to put on your bathing suit and hit the beach? Age Force can help. Try the Age Force Fat Burner Patch for 1 month absolutely free. The advanced 7 Keto and T2 formula with sustained time-release delivery make this the most potent and effective fat loss supplement, period. Try it for 30 days absolutely free and see for yourself. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Age Force banner ad today. What do you have to lose other than body fat? Try the Age Force Fat Burner Patch today. Absolutely free. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the banner ad now.
Jumping higher, lifting more. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back. Okay, sit down, unlock your brain, be ready for some new information. Don't kick and scream and go, no, 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 it can't be true, because it is. People have been taking BCAAs and even EAAs forever, expecting it will mitigate fatigue during working out, as well as increase the building of muscle. But there is a lot of research out there that perhaps contradicts some of this information. So let's talk about fatigue, first of all. It was once thought, Adele, and probably still believed, that leucine blocks the uptake of serotonin in the brain, and that serotonin is what leads to fatigue during training. So you can mitigate fatigue by taking BCAAs. What is the current research showing?
Well, actually, it's not just the current research, but all the research that was done on this particular subject back in the day says that the beneficial effects of BCAAs in general, which is supposed to be by blocking the uptake of tryptophan and later on the production of serotonin during workouts and its effect on fatigue, that this really did not play out in any of these studies. There were, in some cases, there were minor effects, but if the hypothesis held as it was proposed initially, it would have had to have much more pronounced effects. And with the latest research showing that on the one hand, the BCAA supplementation does blunt the uptake of tryptophan, but it does also blunt the uptake of its maybe you could call it an antagonist, which is tyrosine. And tyrosine is obviously being converted to dopamine in the brain, and would have the exact opposite effect. And with blocking the uptake of both of these amino acids, you end up depleting your neurotransmitter levels totally, not just the serotonin, but also the dopamine levels in response to the ingestion of large amounts of BCAAs, so that the net effect is, in general, zero in terms of performance benefits. And in view of the fact that it is not just a reduction of the production of dopamine in the brain, but also a reduction of the production of catecholamines, which are the hormones that are responsible to spike you up while you're
right, because
out.
When people take caffeine to help their workout, one of the things caffeine does is it increases catecholamine production in the brain, and that kind of makes you motivated to train hard and gives you greater focus. So the BCAAs, while they do in fact perhaps mitigate the production of serotonin that leads to fatigue, they also mitigate the thing that drives you to train harder simultaneously. So they have, and here's my question, Adele. I know that a lot of the research that was done looked at the isolated production of these downstream cascades. But has anyone ever done the study where, like they did with the liver tablets, where they gave the little rats BCAAs and then dropped them in a pool to see if they swam longer with or without?
Oh, well, actually, they did this with a chronic supplementation study in rats, where they provided them diets that were particularly rich in BCAAs and found that particular regimen had detrimental effects on the performance of the rats in those swimming studies. It really reduced their endurance, and it totally increased, and this is another by-effect, the production of ammonia, which is also a factor that is highly involved in the exercise or in the fatigue that is induced by exercise.
So how did we get this far up the road, still believing that BCAAs could enhance production, energy production and training ability, when all of the research says that it doesn't?
Well, I'm not quite sure how this happened, but I think much of it is also related to the insights we have from other aspects of amino acid metabolism, where BCAAs obviously trigger or obviously increase the expression of mTOR, and are thus regarded as ergogenic in a way of stimulating muscle protein synthesis. And the original hypothesis is not wrong, because they do block the uptake of tryptophan and reduce the levels of serotonin, or the buildup of serotonin during workouts. But at the same time, they have a negative side effect that will, in most cases, nullify their effects. In some cases, and for me personally, this wasn't the case, they lead to a profound crash after the workout. When the natural catecholamine production drops to basically zero, and you feel like falling asleep after a workout when you've been ingesting large amounts of BCAAs during or before the workout.
And so I replied to Adele in an email, well, this is why on the occasions I use free-form amino acids, I use EAAs, and your reply was EAAs do the same thing.
Yeah, the latest study actually... They thought probably the problem is about about no tryptophan being
right
in the supplement we gave our rats in the study, and so they tried different forms. So they tried to add L-tyrosine. Sorry, I think I just said tryptophan. Obviously, there was no L-tyrosine in an isolated BCAA supplement.
Right.
They added L-tyrosine to the mix, and found that this does not really mitigate the situation. It helped a little bit, but still reduced the dopamine levels to lower levels than they found in the rats who exercised after receiving the placebo. And the next hypothesis was there must be something else missing. So they tested a combination of essential amino acids and also free from amino acids, and found that this had the exact same detrimental effect on the dopamine levels. And the last resort was, and this is actually quite interesting, because the scientists can't really explain where this difference comes from. They used an essential amino acid supplement that was derived from milk protein, and that had a slightly different amino acid content than the free-form version, and that did in fact not have those detrimental effects. So on the practical side of things, this would mean that the ingestion of whey protein, for example, during or before a whey workout, is probably not going to have these detrimental effects, while many of the specific formulas constituting or having just BCAAs or EAAs as a free form in their free forms could have this, or let's say the BCAAs certainly have it, and for the EAAs it may depend on the exact composition.
Well, and now let me pose a supposition to you that I've been thinking about since our email exchange just this morning. When my sister was taking her Parkinson's disease medications, one of the prerequisites was that she could not take it within a half hour after or for an hour after taking her medication. She could not have a protein meal because protein blunted the levodopa-carbidopa ability to mitigate the symptoms. So I got to thinking, and maybe the whole story is not told yet. And the only reason I'm thinking about this is because, you know, I'm experimenting with different phases of fasting and a more ancestral approach to exercise using some of Dr. Malin Watfi's information and blah, 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 blah. And I noticed that when I am hungry, counter to what I thought would be the case, I have more than enough energy to train and more than enough strength to train at the same levels as when I'm fed. And there is an old adage, stay hungry, which implies stay alert, stay aggressive. What if, in fact, we learn that having a protein meal of any type prior to an extremely intense workout is in some way, even in small amounts, counterproductive?
Well, this could be, but based on the latest study in the Journal of Amino Acids, this wouldn't be the case if this was a milk protein, because this did not have the negative effects that were brought about by the BCAA mix.
But did it have a positive effect that actually enhanced the ability to train longer and harder?
Not really. The effect was pretty neutral, so to say.
And that's my point.
So, in essence, what you could still get out of it would probably be an increase in protein synthesis. But what should also be said is that there are a couple of interesting studies done on the effects of BCAAs in the etiology of the metabolic syndrome, which also suggests that the chronic supplementation of BCAAs in the context of a high-fat diet, for example, it accelerates the weight gain, and it also accelerates the impact or the onset of insulin resistance. And this is an effect that is mitigated actually by what you want to achieve by supplementing with all those BCAAs, which is a chronic increase in mTOR, and at the same time a chronic deficiency, so to say, of the expression of AMP kinase, which is the antagonist of mTOR, and is responsible for, or is actually behind most of the beneficial effects of fasting. And that reminds me of a question I've received a couple of days ago only, whether it wouldn't be a good idea to supplement with BCAAs during the fast in order to prevent the catabolism of muscle tissue. And my answer was that just because on the label of the BCAA supplements you see zero calories, this does not mean that this does have zero impact on what happens during the fast.
Mm.
And in fact, protein is the last thing you want to consume when you're fasting, because this will certainly, just as about as carbohydrates, will reduce the expression of AMP kinase and will and could counter the beneficial effects, especially the health effects of fasting, maybe not so much the weight loss effect, at least if you're in a chronic calorie deficit.
Okay, we're going to take our last commercial break. When we come back, I want you to give me the Subversity prescription. If, in fact, BCAAs and EAAs possess some sort of a benefit, what is the timing? What is the use? Where can they be used, if not pre-workout, and not in between meals to avoid being catabolic, or maybe that is. So let's do this. Let's take a quick commercial break. During the break, please visit Subversity, SUPPVERSITY.com, to learn more. There's a lot of great posts on Subversity about BCAAs and EAAs specifically. Just one place you have to go every day, other than listening to this show, that is Subversity.com. We'll be right back.
If you're taking more than one nutritional supplement, stop. Simplify your supplementation with Bio Superfood, the most advanced nutritional whole food you can buy. Even Olympic athletes have discovered Bio Superfood from BioAge.com. You take just one nutritional supplement to help the brain with focus, memory, clarity, and mood. Bio Superfood has zero toxicity. It is safe with no contraindications. Learn more at BioAge.com or call 877-288-9116. Mention Superhuman Radio and get a 10% discount. You can also go to SuperhumanRadio.com and click the BioAge banner ad. Enter promo code SHR for a discount. At Superior Hardcore Peptides, we pride ourselves on accurately dosed, high-quality peptides and research chemicals made in the USA. With all the options out there, we dedicated ourselves to providing the best service and the best products for your research. Click the banner ad on SuperhumanRadio.com today and use the discount code SHR and get 20% off our already competitive prices. If you're going to do research, do it with the best Superior Hardcore Peptides. You train hard. You push the limits of your body every day, and sometimes pain pushes back. Now silence your pain with Phoenix Kinetocream. Kinetocream is made using a perfect blend of natural ingredients and reduces inflammation and shuts down pain with its very first use. Listen to what one user said about Phoenix Kinetocream.
Training made me ache. My back, my shoulders, even my elbows. I rub Kinetocream on my shoulders, and in minutes, I could feel the pain go away, not covered up by that freezing feeling like other creams. The pain was gone.
You can learn more about Kinetocream by visiting PhoenixBioPerformance.com. Don't let pain slow you down. Rise above the ashes with Phoenix Kinetocream. That's PhoenixBioPerformance.com. If you want to outlast, outmuscle, and outperform your competition with a high-powered, stimulant-free carbohydrate source that has zero sugars, you want Carbolin. Carbolin is the original high-performance fuel that will allow you to load your muscles with glycogen in minutes instead of hours. As a pre, intra, and post-training supplement, it will give you a hardness and fullness to your muscles like you've never felt before. As an endurance supplement, Carbolin has been proven to increase VO2 max by 2.8%. If you want fast absorption and sustained energy without bloating or cramping, get Carbolin. Go to AAEFX.com today. Summer's almost here. Are you ready to put on your bathing suit and hit the beach? Age Force can help. Try the Age Force Fat Burner Patch for 1 month absolutely free. The Advanced 7 Keto and T2 formula with sustained time release delivery make this the most potent and effective fat loss supplement, period. Try it for 30 days absolutely free and see for yourself. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Age Force banner ad today. What do you have to lose other than body fat? Try the Age Force Fat Burner Patch today. Absolutely free. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the banner ad now. You train hard. You push the limits of your body every day, and sometimes pain pushes back. Now silence your pain with Phoenix Kinetocream. Kinetocream is made using a perfect blend of natural ingredients and reduces inflammation and shuts down pain with its very first use. Listen to what one user said about Phoenix Kinetocream.
Training made me ache. My back, my shoulders, even my elbows. I rub Kinetocream on my shoulders, and in minutes, I could feel the pain go away, not covered up by that freezing feeling like other creams. The pain was gone.
You can learn more about Kinetocream by visiting PhoenixBioPerformance.com. Don't let pain slow you down. Rise above the ashes with Phoenix Kinetocream. That's PhoenixBioPerformance.com.
Your radio just got ripped. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back. Later in the show, we're going to explore the paleo prescription with Bethany Lynn Tyler. We're going to ask the question, How do we incorporate diversity and flexibility into the human diet when we look at the evolutionary model? So it's going to be an interesting discussion. Okay, Adele. So what can we say? Is there a time and a place where BCAAs and or EAAs could be beneficial, that they would actually serve a unique purpose not served by any other dietary forms?
Not served by any other dietary forms? I would say no. Because if you look at the research that's out there, there is no study showing that the ingestion of BCAAs is more anabolic than the ingestion of complete proteins, or fast-digesting complete proteins at least. So I don't really see where a scenario where you cannot accomplish that by, for example, the same effect by ingesting a whey protein shake. And what should be said about the ingestion before a workout, the specific effects on the brain are also dependent on being fasted. So when you're doing this in a fat state and the absorption of the BCAAs is not so immediate, the acute effects on the brain levels of tryptophan and of tyrosine are also not so pronounced. So you won't see the same detrimental effects. On the other hand, I think that the overall message you receive in the commercials from the supplement industry is flawed, that you cannot train without BCAAs, or that you will see magnificent increases in muscle gains or performance if you switch from, say, a complete protein, which may be digested a little smaller, a little slower than BCAAs, to a BCAA or EAA formula. So the only scenario I can think of, and that also has scientific evidence where it is beneficial, is to pimp inferior protein sources by adding BCAAs and EAAs to them. But if the option is, or if you're already having a protein shake with 30 or even, maybe even 40 grams of whey in it, it has been constantly shown that you cannot top off the protein anabolic response of that by adding BCAAs or EAAs to the mix. So
what about if you're a vegan and you're using incomplete forms of protein that don't deliver everything? Is there an opportunity for EAAs, for instance, to augment the performance of those inadequate proteins?
Well, as far as I can see, you can just consume pea protein, for example, which is high in BCAAs. Also, fast digesting will have the very similar effect to whey protein. So I don't really think that just because you're vegan and don't want to resort to whey proteins, this is a valuable argument to consume EAAs. You can do this, of course, and I mentioned before, especially after a workout, the problem is probably not so pronounced, as you don't have the concomitant effect of the workout and the supplementation. But on the other hand, you should be aware that one of the main reasons you see all those BCAA and EAA formulas pop up is that you can make more money out of them, because you cannot really generate a benefit or a great benefit for your company if you're selling whey protein. The price for the raw material and the end consumer price, there is a so small margin that there is not much money to be made on them.
That's interesting. So it really is an alternative for the industry to just profit more so when you'd be better off just using a whole premium.
Because if you look at the literature, it's quite clear that the BCAAs are part of the magic in the complete protein, but there's really no scientific evidence that they provide a great benefit compared to just ingesting a high-protein diet. And maybe you remember the paper by, I forgot his name, your guest yesterday. He wrote a paper about about protein timing.
Oh, Schoenberg?
Schoenfield, I think.
Yeah.
Schoenfeld. The basic message of the paper is that this is one of the other common myths that is totally overrated. So what really counts is the net balance. And if you look at the Subversity article I posted today, it's just another study where they try to ameliorate the net protein loss on the diet by supplementing either with leucine or citrulline. And funnily, while citrulline generated, for example, an increase in or had the protein synthesis remain at a stable level, even the control group, which did not receive a protein or any amino acid supplement, did lose any significant amount of muscle tissue. So I think the problem here is that the real-world results and the results of measured protein synthesis in specific studies are really worlds apart.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what? It's unfortunate, but really, this discussion, you know, when so many of us are trying to make good decisions about spending our dollars on the things that we need as hard training athletes, and we want better performance and we want increases in muscle and so on, it appears to me that EAAs and BCAAs, these free form amino acids, really are a bust. It's not worth the dollars. You're better off buying a whole protein powder like whey or pea protein and using that instead pre-workout and post-workout. Sure, it's a little slower to get into the body, but it seems that you can time it better, take it earlier in the morning before your workout, if you want some of those benefits that you believe protein in the system will provide. Would you agree with that?
Well, talking about speed, actually, the net increase in amino acids from a hydrolyzed protein is probably higher than from a preformed amino acid supplement.
Really?
Because you have two distinguished ways of absorption, which is one, the almost already free amino acids, which are broken apart within seconds in your digestive tract. Maybe it doesn't kick in at the same rate, but the net influx will be about the same. And you have a second system that is going to absorb the small peptides. And these small peptides have been shown in the past months, actually, to have specific effects. For example, there are certain dipeptides consisting of isoleucine and another amino acid, which appear to really upregulate the GLUT4 expression in the muscle and increase the glucose absorption. And this is also part of the reason why whey proteins, for example, which are in the hydrolyzed form, already have this D-peptide, and when they are hydrolyzed in the course of the digestion process, will probably produce some of these peptides, have such a profound effect on the glucose metabolism in diabetic patients.
Yeah, it's really amazing. So there you go. Throw your BCAAs and EAAs away and just turn to whole proteins. That's it. Great discussion. Both on magnesium and BCAAs. And you know what? A lot of people are going, it can't be. Too many people use them. Too many people believe in them. It doesn't matter. Because the truth is, the supplement industry promotes this stuff. And that's why we believe in it. So there you go. Adel Moussa, thank you so much. Will you have some more conclusions on Subversity Seconds tomorrow on your blog?
I will, but I'm not quite sure if I can tackle both topics in one installment, but I will address both the magnesium as well as the BCAA issue in some detail, especially the latter one, because I know people will go, that can't be, and it's established that you must take your BCAAs in order to get great results in the gym.
Yeah, exactly. Adel, thanks so much for being on the show today. I know you're very, very busy.
You're welcome.
Okay, everybody go to Subversity, SUPPVERSITY.com today. We'll be right back with more Superhuman Radio. Stay tuned.
Can you find your way through the lyrics that be catching them? Throw another rhyme across the room, they be fetching them. You may take a loss to the master, and I throw a crazy blow.
a few products that I believe in, the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find CanSee eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. wisechoicemedicine.net. CanSee eye drops. The name says it all.
If you're taking more than one nutritional supplement, stop. Simplify your supplementation with Bio Superfood, the most advanced nutritional whole food you can buy. Even Olympic athletes have discovered Bio Superfood from BioAge.com. You take just one nutritional supplement to help the brain with focus, memory, clarity, and mood. Bio Superfood has zero toxicity. It is safe with no contraindications. Learn more at BioAge.com or call 877-288-9116. Mention Superhuman Radio and get a 10% discount. You can also go to SuperhumanRadio.com and click the BioAge banner ad. Enter promo code SHR for a discount. If you want to outlast, outmuscle, and outperform your competition with a high-powered, stimulant-free carbohydrate source that has zero sugars, you want Carbolin. Carbolin is the original high-performance fuel that will allow you to load your muscles with glycogen in minutes instead of hours. As a pre, intra, and post-training supplement, it will give you a hardness and fullness to your muscles like you've never felt before. As an endurance supplement, Carbolin has been proven to increase VO2 max by 2.8%. If you want fast absorption and sustained energy without bloating or cramping, get Carbolin. Go to AAEFX.com today. New from Rob Regish. Purchase the Blueprint 3.0 today and lock in your free 3-month subscription to the Blueprint Bulletin. Find out what many in the BP Army already know. This is the best investment they've ever made. Includes the free Superhuman University, add 1 inch to your upper arms course, and 3 months of Blueprint Bulletin secrets to up your game. Click the Blueprint banner ad today or go to bodybuildingsupplements.com and purchase your ticket to Gainesville in the fast lane.
AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your question. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn, teach, lead.
You basically live life thanks to vitamin D. It affects every type of cell and tissue in your body. This is the reason optimizing your vitamin D blood level is essential for healthy living. The most efficient way to optimize your blood level is to take the perfect dose. And the most cost-effective way to determine the perfect dose is through vitamin D blood testing. The vitamin D test for Superhuman Radio is only $30, $17 cheaper than the lowest member price. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Life Extension banner ad to order.
Move over, superheroes. This is the Superhuman Channel.
Welcome back. Okay. Obviously, the paleo movement, the ancestral movement, has really contributed a great deal to the discussion about the role of diet on the etiology of disease. But it doesn't just end there. We obviously can't go back and forget and abandon what we also know to be true from modern times. And that's pretty much some of the discussion that we're going to have right now with my next guest, Bethany Lynn Tyler, who is with the Anthropology Department at Georgia State. We're going to be in Atlanta next week for the Ancestral Health Symposium. Are you going to be there by any chance, Bethany?
I wasn't planning on it, but since it's right down the street, then yeah, that sounds great.
Yeah, it's going to be really cool. So, all right, so let's talk about this. Give my audience some background about your area of educational discipline, what you typically study, and why you even started looking at this whole paleo dietary phenomenon.
Sure, I'd be glad to. I'm a biological anthropologist, which means I study aspects of human behavior and human health, but from a perspective that draws pretty heavily from biology, evolutionary theory, anatomy, things like that. And my interest in particular is reconstructing health and behavior and disease patterns in ancient populations. So my research takes place typically in Peru, and with populations anywhere from 500 to 1,500 years old. But really, since we're dealing with skeletal material and since you don't have the full scope of physiology to study with these populations. Of necessity, you know, I and people who study what I do, we have to be pretty well versed in human nutrition and human physiology in order to take a look at fragmentary remains and start to talk about, you know, the living bodies that they represented.
Yeah, and we have to make a lot of assumptions too. We don't know a whole lot. I mean, we may think we know what the diet was, but we don't really know what that rendition of food really possessed in the way of, let's say, fatty acid ratios and so on and so forth. I mean, there's a lot. I had this discussion with Leslie Aiello from the Wenner Gren Foundation many years ago, and she said, you know, the desire to eat an ancestral diet is commendable, but it's impossible. Food has changed. The apple wasn't that sweet back then. You know, we've hybridized and we've hybridized food so that we could take advantage of the things we love the most. That may be not the way it was back then.
Absolutely. And, you know, part of it, too, is that for a long time people referred to a Paleolithic diet without necessarily thinking too terribly deeply about what that meant. And, you know, thinking about the fact that by the Paleolithic era, human populations lived in most of the landmass of the world. They still hadn't arrived in the Western Hemisphere, so they weren't in North and South America until probably about 15, 16,000 years ago. That's what the latest evidence is, or possibly even earlier. But, you know, well into the Paleolithic, they were living all over the globe in lots and lots of different environments. And so some of the really exciting stuff that's happening now is people are starting to think more critically about what the full scope of the food resources that were available were, and how we can try to investigate what it was that humans were actually choosing to eat.
And I want to ask you the question in a second about what evidence there is that what foods that they had available and chose to eat. But there's something else that needs to be underscored here. Just because it's what was available doesn't somehow make it better than something that's available today. I think that we need to learn from today that humans, the goal to survive and procreate is job one. And we did whatever we had to do and have to do as a species to continue doing that. So sometimes we took conditions that weren't the best, optimal, whatever you want to call them, and made them work. With that being said, what was available back then that maybe is misunderstood or misrepresented by the general paleo message today?
Yeah, it's a great question. And really, it kind of depends on what part of the world you're looking at. Are you looking at equatorial Africa? Are you looking at, you know, modern-day Southeast Asia? Are you looking
How about what would have become, you know, the European gene pool? Can we look at that?
Yeah, sure. And in fact, you know, Europe, because there are so many caves in Europe, it's actually got some of the best preservation of Paleolithic remains in the world, and that's why a lot of people have spent a lot of time there. The environments in Africa are also really great, but because
they're
more open,
I want to ask you about that next, because we know that African American people suffer the greatest from the Western diet, more so than Caucasian people from Europe. So let's start with the European diet. What did they have then that we thought or is different than what we want to portray in the paleo diet? Did they eat a lot of fish, for instance? I asked this question once to Lauren Cordain.
Yeah. I would imagine that coastal populations did exploit a lot of coastal resources. But if you think about it, too, unless you have sea craft, and unless you have a good understanding of the, you know, not just tides, but the real particulars. I mean, if you ask any commercial fisherman nowadays, I mean, the amount of knowledge that's needed to go out into the open ocean and look for big fish is something where we don't see those material correlates in the Paleolithic, in the archaeological record. So it's probably very likely that human populations were exploiting resources where they could wade out into the water, as opposed to, you know, cast out in boats, you know, way out into open ocean. So we're probably dealing with a lot of shellfish, with a lot of smaller fish, and, you know, with things that were seasonally available. those populations that lived further inland, you know, it wouldn't have been as easy unless you had access to a big source of salt to, you know, preserve and cure a lot of that protein. So it would have been some combination of probably bigger game every now and again, particularly in those environments where there wasn't as much biodiversity, where a lot of the animals that we find in the archaeological record are what are called Pleistocene megafauna, or if literally Ice Age big animals. And you only really found those in areas where there wasn't a whole lot of plant growth, where you couldn't support a whole lot of smaller-bodied animals. As glaciers retreated and advanced at various points, it would have been possible to hunt smaller game, to gather a lot more plant material, including protein sources in plants like wild nuts and things like that. So the period really towards the end of the Paleolithic has been characterized as what's called the broad spectrum revolution. So there was a broad spectrum of resources that were available to be exploited by human populations.
So the current paleo template is some amount of naturally raised animal protein, you know, grass-fed, grass-finished beef, and, you know, so on and so forth. Obviously, animals having a natural diet plays a big role in whether or not they should be consumed in this message. But some animal protein and some greens, which have been readily eaten without any processing or cooking. Is that an accurate model for that period of time?
Well, I mean, in part. But what's interesting is that within the past couple of years, there have been some discoveries in archaeological sites in southern Europe and into eastern Europe of handheld grinding stones. And you can tell the difference between a grinding stone and just a regular, you know, stone that's been, say, polished by river water or something like that, because it has a divot, a sort of a bowl-shaped divot in the middle of it, of what is otherwise a flat stone, and it's the kind of shaping that you wouldn't find naturally. And so humans were creating grinding stones and analyses of the residues from those grinding stones that date to about 30,000 years ago suggests that Paleolithic populations were grinding wild starches into a paste, which they would then either cook into some sort of flatbread or, you know, some sort of gruel. And so, you know, it's what's interesting is that humans have been manipulating all of the wild plants in their environment for much longer, I think, than was originally thought. And I think part of that was just because so much of what we know is dictated by what we find.
Right.
And so when you find new tools like this, it really helps to validate that, in fact, you know, Paleolithic populations were likely making some sort of bread.
But we also know at that point in time, because we did this show, that atherosclerosis was evident in small numbers in these whatever you want to call prehistoric populations, arterial plaque, and even some wall drawings of what could have been heart attack. And you know, the current belief is that grains cause these problems. So it's, you know, it's interesting to find out, well, wait a minute, some of these things that we believe are bad for us today may have been present at that time as well. And I'm not getting into the debate whether it really leads to it, but I just think it's interesting that they were grinding grains back then. What about the sub-Saharan African population? We see that African Americans really do not fare well with the Western diet. Obesity, diabetes, heart disease. African American men develop prostate cancer at a much more rapid rate than their Caucasian counterparts. Is there any evidence that their early diet was so different that it's predictable that this is the way they would react in modern times?
You know, this is a really interesting question too, and the short answer is no. But the longer answer is that a lot of people have been looking, and this is something that that my colleague Amanda Thompson and I recently published in an article in Nutrition Reviews. There's been a lot of focus on the genetic underpinnings or the genetic mechanisms of human nutrition and human health. And what seems to emerge from all of these decades of genetic research is that like so many other things, there appears to be more genetic variation within a population than there is between them. So there doesn't appear to be anything specific about being African American or from the African continent that genetically predisposes individuals to heart disease and things like that. It really does appear to be socially learned behaviors. Oh. And by that, I don't mean things where, you know, by the time you hit elementary school or high school or in the break room at work, really fetuses in the womb are able to pick up flavor volatiles from mom's diet by about the second trimester, by about 20 weeks. So what mom is eating, the baby is learning, is food. And so if mom is eating a relatively impoverished diet, then baby is effectively programmed developmentally to either conserve calories or, you know, hang on to as much glucose as possible because they learn that deprivation is the norm, or they just aren't exposed to the full variety of flavors, so that by the time they're born and they're toddlers, they exhibit more of what's called neophobia, or the unwillingness to try new foods. You know, any parent whose kid has just refused to eat anything except French fries has been exposed primarily to neophobia. And so it seems like there's nothing particularly genetic about being African American. It really, a lot of the human bio research that's coming out suggests that it's the lived experience of being African American in the United States and Europe, that it's the stress of systemic discrimination and impoverishment and lowered opportunities, and a lot of that comes with lowered access to healthy foods. Those healthy foods that you do have access to are often outside of your price range. Some of what we talk about in our article, my colleague and I, is that sugar seems to be the ancestral pathway in the brain that narcotics have hijacked. And so when people talk about being addicted to sugar,
yeah, it's real.
They're really not lying.
Yeah. No, so, I know. In fact, and one of the things I was going to say, what you just said was profound. When we talk, we already know that the trajectory of a life begins in the womb. And changing that trajectory is very difficult once the child is born. But this makes it even clearer to me, because we have neural pathways, sensations of satisfaction that are being tied to these remnant flavors that are reaching this fetus, that it automatically, when it tastes these foods for the first time, the addictive light bulb in their head goes off. Yeah, it's like, and we know that people who crave sugar, their brain lights up just like an addict who craves heroin. In fact, the idea of going to eat, walking to the refrigerator to get their favorite ice cream, they get that same sensation of euphoria that an addict gets when they're just going to cop their drugs. They get high for the first time, then they get high again when they use the drug. The same thing is true of these individuals that are addicted to these flavors.
Yeah, and I mean, it's interesting because it seems as if that neurological pathway, it involves a neurotransmitter called dopamine.
Bingo.
It seems like that's present with everyone, and that, you know, some individuals, it appears to be more strongly expressed than others, but again, it seems to be something that's more on the level of the individual as opposed to, you know, your ancestry. But the, you know, one of the interesting things too, and that we kind of really emphasize in the article, is that it's not necessarily that that we have this pathway where sugar is processed through essentially the reward pathway of the brain, and much the same way that narcotics are. But if you think about someone who is growing up in a chronically stressed environment and are just, they're constantly stressed out, constantly worried, I mean, think about the last time you had a really bad day. Chances are you went and found yourself a candy bar because it can help
made you
alleviate
feel good.
The stress. Yeah,
you're self-medicating. You're self-medicating.
Exactly. And so, you know, we feel that a lot of the attention that's been paid to the fact that humans are somehow programmed to love sugar and love fat, well, I think in some ways it ignores the fact that there's a reward loop that's being created whereby you're stressed out. This helps alleviate the stress. The same thing is true with fat. There have been some.
Well, and wait, I want you to hold that thought, because here's why.
Oh, okay.
I have to take a break. We've gone long, but it's
sure.
Important. When I come back, I want to talk about fat. I want to talk about saturated fat. I want to talk about, more importantly, omega-3s, because one of the things that is propagated by the paleo diet prescription is that our ancestors had much higher omega-3 than omega-6 ratios in their foods, especially in animal proteins, and I want to talk about that. We're talking right now with Bethany Lynn Tyler, and we're talking about the paleo prescription, incorporating diversity and flexibility in the study of human diet evolution. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more.
And the BP Army already know this is the best investment they've ever made. Includes the free Superhuman University, Add 1 Inch to Your Upper Arms course, and 3 months of Blueprint Bulletin Secrets to up your game. Click the Blueprint banner ad today or go to bodybuildingsupplements.com and purchase your ticket to Gainesville in the fast lane. Usually something for nothing is worth nothing, but go to superhumanradio.com and click the Life Extension banner ad to get a 1-year Life Extension Foundation membership free, plus a $25 product credit. So what does that buy you? Cutting edge information, knowledgeable health advisors, huge discounts on blood tests and supplements. Want to stay younger and healthier longer? Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Life Extension banner ad and become a Life Extension member now. No cost, no obligation, no kidding.
Toothpaste is loaded with toxic chemicals. That's why I use Aura MD. Aura MD is a natural dental care product that is made from botanical oils that promotes healthy oral microbiome while destroying dangerous bacteria that lead to oral health problems. It does not contain fluoride, detergents, surfactants, or any other chemicals. Best of all, it leaves your breath smelling so good people will comment about it. Right now, you can get a buy one, get one free of Aura MD by going to superhumanradio.com and clicking the Aura MD banner ad. I won't ever use anything else but Aura MD, and neither should you.
Superhuman Radio has the smartest and most dedicated health and fitness listeners found anywhere in the world. If you're trying to tap this market of greater than 50 million health fitness consumers, you simply can't do better than advertising on Superhuman Radio. Our sponsors tell us Superhuman Radio outperforms other forms of advertising time and time again. If you're tired of wasting valuable advertising dollars and need a new way to build your client base, go to superhumanradio.com and click on the Advertise with Us link. It just may be the best thing you have ever done for your business. You basically live life thanks to vitamin D. It affects every type of cell and tissue in your body. This is the reason optimizing your vitamin D blood level is essential for healthy living. The most efficient way to optimize your blood level is to take the perfect dose. And the most cost-effective way to determine the perfect dose is through vitamin D blood testing. The vitamin D test for Superhuman Radio is only $30, $17 cheaper than the lowest member price. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Life Extension banner ad to order. People who want the best whey protein in the world turn to WheyNaturalUSA.com. WheyNaturalUSA produces the only whey protein from grass pasture-fed cows raised right here in the USA. You cannot get the same quality whey protein anywhere else, period. WheyNaturalUSA is cold-processed through the patented Chill-Rite process, so all the undenatured fractions of whey stay intact. Just pure grass pasture-fed whey in all its natural glory. Go to WheyNaturalUSA.com today and find out what you've been missing. WheyNaturalUSA.com.
Jumping higher, lifting more. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. Okay. So, Bethany, part of the message that we get from the staunch paleo community is to embrace fats, that our paleo ancestors and in the ancestral diet model consumed high amounts of saturated fats and received much more omega-3 fats in their diet than omega-6 fats. Any truth to either of these notions?
Based on studies of the nutrient content and the fat content of modern foods, so including wild game and domesticated, meat, livestock, things like that, it definitely seems as if wild game and plant-based fats tend to have a lot more of the omega-3s relative to omega-6, and that the reverse is true with domesticated livestock.
And what about saturated fat? Where does that work into this whole message here? Were they consuming high amounts of saturated fat in their diets? And if so, where were they getting it?
You know, it's likely that they weren't, because the original study that really kicked off the whole Paleolithic diet movement was a 1985 article in the New England Journal of Medicine by a guy named Boyd Eaton.
Yeah, he's been on my show, actually. Boyd's been on my show.
Yeah, he's great.
Yeah.
And so what they were finding was that, in fact, not only is the omega-3 to omega-6 ratio different in wild game versus domesticated livestock, but the amount of unsaturated fat relative to saturated fat in the flesh of wild game, and I should say, you know, the kind of domesticated livestock that are more free range, that are not kept up in pens all the time,
and aren't eating chow, and they're not eating chows, they're not eating man-made diets, right? Exactly.
Yeah, that they also they have a lot less saturated fat in their fat content than domesticated. But the domesticated that they're talking about, and that you know, tends to be the comparison, is really sort of modern industrial factory farmed livestock. So even with early agriculturalists in the Neolithic, well up until I would speculate the 18th, 19th century, these livestock would have been, you know, similarly having more unsaturated fat and more omega-3 fatty acids in their cells than what you see once factory farming really begins.
The scientific community that embraces the ancestral movement is always in search of what would be the optimal ratios of omega-3 to omega-6 that may have existed in this untainted environment of our ancestral beginnings. Is there any evidence that, some people say, oh, well, it was 1-to-1. Some people say it was 2-to-1, omega-3 to omega-6. And any indication that there is some, quote-unquote, ancestral predictable ratio of omega-3 to omega-6s that existed back then? And the second part of this question is, was that a good thing, or did it help our ancestors in any way, and maybe today it's better?
Well, I would say that finding a specific ratio would be a little more different, because or a little difficult, because the ratios that we have today are based on modern plants, modern animals that are studied. And so all that we have, you know, we can't actually get fatty acid content from the fossilized remains of Paleolithic animals. So it can be difficult to extrapolate a very specific ratio back. You know, the thing is that particularly populations in Asia and Africa would also have been getting a lot of their animal protein, at least, from insects, possibly, which, you know, I haven't really come across a whole lot of scientific research that's looked systematically at the fat content and the different ratios in insects either. Particularly in open environments where you tend to have, you know, termite mounds that are 6 feet tall. And, you know, it has been suggested that ounce for ounce insects provide more calories and protein than a comparable serving of meat. So, you know, that's just something to keep in mind as well.
Oh, I know. There are organizations at work right now that are trying to say, hey, if we want to feed the world, we're going to have to start eating grubs again. And the question I ask is, I mean, we have so many rituals and tendencies and habits that harken back to the beginning days, you know, animal husbandry and so on. Why didn't we continue to eat bugs and grubs today if we ate them back then? Surely we would have made them, quote unquote, civilized ready if it was something that benefited us.
This would be just speculation on my part, but there aren't as many insect populations that could provide a subsistence base in Europe as other areas of the world,
right,
that Europe ultimately ended up conquering and colonizing and spending several centuries just completely annihilating all of the cultural knowledge and really denigrating local foods and things like that. So so I would say, you know, that might have more to do with it than there being anything, you know, particularly deficient in insects. I myself am a big fan of grasshopper tacos. So
are you being sincere, or are you kidding around right now?
Oh, no, I'm being absolutely sincere. They're delicious.
So where do you get grasshopper tacos in Georgia?
Oh, well, Atlanta is a little-known food hub, and so there's actually all manner of different restaurants in Atlanta. It's one of the sort of foodie paradises of the Southeast. If you look hard enough, you can find it.
And, and are these whole embodied grasshoppers, or is this like a grasshopper puree turned into a burger meat?
No. It's whole small grasshoppers that are deep fried. And in fact, you wouldn't want to puree them because they have the exoskeleton gives them a really nutty texture. And so, you'd want to keep them whole.
You know what else has a nutty texture?
What's that?
Nuts. And I think I'll stick to those instead of grasshoppers. Look, we're going to we have to take a break to get back on our clock. When we come back, I want to talk about through your research. Obviously, there are things worth salvaging from today. And things worth salvaging from our ancestral beginnings. And I want to ask you to kind of just give us like maybe the Reader's Digest version of what is important from back then and what we should not necessarily hold on to any longer. We're talking this hour with Bethany Lynn Tyler, and she is with the Anthropology Department at Georgia State University. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Dumbbells can replace up to 55 pairs of dumbbells in the space of just one pair, and they come in all sizes to meet the needs of all lifters, as small as 2.5 to 20 pounds per hand, all the way up to 175 pounds per hand, and everything in between. Check out the new Power Block barbells that turn your Power Block dumbbells into barbells in seconds, replacing up to 45 barbells. Or try the new kettlebell handle to convert Power Block dumbbells to kettlebells. Call 800-651-1937 or click the banner ad on superhumanradio.com. For a free brochure.
Could Altrient supplements be better than a Myers cocktail? Find out for yourself when you try Altrient C and Altrient ME. Using liposomal encapsulated technology, Altrient C's gel delivers up to 200% more vitamin C than pills or powders. The Altrient ME gel provides a high-performance blend of B vitamins and minerals. Make your own Altrient cocktail 100% risk-free. Call 888-437-6353 or order at feelgoodc.com. That's feelgoodc.com. Use coupon code FREE and ask about a free gift with every order you place. Order today at feelgoodc.com or 888-437-6353. Don't forget to mention coupon code FREE to receive your free gift.
Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right. Buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household.
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finer supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
People who want the best whey protein in the world turn to WhayNaturalUSA.com. Whey Natural USA produces the only whey protein from grass pasture-fed cows raised right here in the USA. You cannot get the same quality whey protein anywhere else, period. Whey Natural USA is cold-processed through the patented Chill-Rite process, so all the undenatured fractions of whey stay intact. Just pure grass pasture-fed whey in all its natural glory. Go to WhayNaturalUSA.com today and find out what you've been missing. WhayNaturalUSA.com.
Usually something for nothing is worth nothing, but go to superhumanradio.com and click the Life Extension banner ad to get a one-year Life Extension Foundation membership free, plus a $25 product credit. So what does that buy you? Cutting-edge information, knowledgeable health advisors, huge discounts on blood tests and supplements. Want to stay younger and healthier longer? Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Life Extension banner ad and become a Life Extension member now. No cost, no obligation, no kidding.
Get strong. Feel younger. It's Superhuman Radio.
J.R.
Sean Kingston.
Welcome back. You know, I just had a conversation with Adele Moussa earlier today before the show, and I said, you know, in discussion about this particular interview, and I said, you know, I'm not going to throw away what is good about today and only embrace what I think was good for my ancestors, because that would be foolish. That was short-sighted. My ancestors, when they went potty, they wiped with leaves. I like toilet paper. I'm not going back that far. But obviously there are some benefits of what we know about the ancestral diet, and there are some benefits of what we know scientifically today. So what is worthy of keeping that we do know about the ancestral diet in today's model?
Well, I think that the emphasis on including more plants across the board in one's diet is just, you know, if nothing else, adding more plant material to your diet will help improve your overall health and prevent metabolic dysregulation like type 2 diabetes, like a lot of aspects of heart disease. So, you know, they don't have to be wild plants. They don't have to be, things that you gathered from your backyard or off the side of the highway. But, you know, more dark leafy greens, more minimally processed vegetables, more raw plants. I would say you really can't go wrong with that.
There is some evidence that some plants, more so than others, may have different types of anti-nutrients, kind of nature's pesticides that may promote a low-grade inflammatory response in the host that's eating them. Things like nightshades, it's starting to become a little more clear about eggplants, for instance. And I'm Italian, and I grew up eating eggplant parmesan as a kid. You know, so I think that what you're saying is absolutely correct, with a mild caveat that, hey, you know, but stay tuned, because maybe not all plants are created equal, as we learn about everything in life. Would you agree with that statement?
I would. And I would say to anybody who's listening, who's thinking of, you know, incorporating more plants into their diet, you know, particularly the less you know about the plant itself, the more attention you should pay to the cuisine that uses those plants all the time. Because, you know, things like the nightshades, most people don't know that raw potatoes, raw manioc, most of those indigenous American tubers, in their raw form, contain low levels of cyanide, or cyanate. And so you don't want to eat raw potatoes. You're going to start to feel really sick pretty soon. But if you look at all of the populations where potatoes form a major part of the cuisine, they're never raw. They're always cooked or pounded or soaked and things like that. And so, you know, the more you learn about the different cuisines of populations around the world, the more you realize what adaptive systems of knowledge they are for knowing how to combine different ingredients to complete proteins. If you've got some ingredients that are deficient in some amino acids and others that are deficient in others, you combine them and they complement each other. Ways to prepare foods so that you can remove anything that is harmful to you.
Let's stay with potatoes for a second, right? So my mother always skinned potatoes before she cooked them, right? But then we came to modern times when the modern steakhouse left the skin on the potato, and people just love that. They go, oh, you know, it's potato in natural form. Well, guess what? Those anti-nutrients that are designed to keep bugs from eating the potato are the most concentrated in the skin. So one of the ways that you could avoid those things that make you sick about potatoes is to start doing what your mother and your grandmother did and skin them. Who cares what they look like if they don't look like the potatoes from Outback or something like that? Don't eat the skin.
Yeah, no, that's very true. And there are some of those medicinal property, or some of the chemicals that are found in plants, though, that the plant uses as its defense system, are actually medicinal in humans. And in fact, most of the plant-based medicines that we have, and there's a lot of them, they run along a continuum of beneficial up to a certain threshold and then toxic beyond that. And so, you know, what's interesting too is that some of the cyanate that you find in, you know, manioc and potatoes and things like that can be used to offset, say, a crisis, a sickling crisis, if you happen to have sickle cell anemia, things like that. And so, you know, again, it's sort of paying attention to all of the ways in which people have spent hundreds or thousands of years learning about these foods and incorporating them into these cuisine systems. You know, what's interesting is that onions and chili peppers, too, are just packed full of chemical irritants, and they're what the plant uses to deflect, you know, invasive pests. They also are incredibly potent antimicrobials and so can be used in contexts where you don't have a whole lot of refrigeration to help keep food fresh and stable. So it's always the thin line between, you know, beneficial and toxic when you're talking about a lot of the plant compounds.
And, so, and some of these benefits are extrinsic. They're not directly benefits of these compounds. But the hormetic effect through hormesis, the body seems to respond through the immune system and so on to its presence and kind of upregulates things a little bit. And that's why I think there is a point where all of a sudden the returns are diminished. What about polymorphism? So, you know, this kind of comes back to what we were talking about earlier about the populations that originated in different areas and then kind of spread out. Those who ate more fish perhaps over time, they selected for the enzymes needed, let's say, to break down certain things. For, more specifically, I'm a huge proponent of raw and pasteurized milk. And I have no problem drinking milk in general. But there are people out there who are lactose intolerant. Is it important, and this is something I've actually said on the show, you don't necessarily have to go back to cavemen. Just go back 300 or 400 years to your ancestors. Where did they originate? What foods were available? Chances are you'll thrive selecting those foods because your genetics evolved under those conditions and you're prepared to metabolize them. Do you think that's a stray statement?
I mean, I think it definitely works up to a point. You know, what's interesting with the research into, you know, human diets and human nutrition from the genetic level seems to suggest that there's a handful, really only a handful of polymorphisms that can be identified that really seem to have an impact on human digestive health and human metabolism. That the vast majority of human eating behaviors are learned, you know, like we talked about before, starting right in utero, but really moving throughout the whole scope of an individual's life.
Right.
But those, that small number of polymorphisms are, you know, the fact that they're so few doesn't mean that they're not significant. So, you know, lactase persistence is one of those. So the, you know, the default with mammals is that you stop producing the enzyme that breaks down lactose, milk sugars, after you wean, because most mammals never encounter lactose in their environment in any, you know, major amount once they stop breastfeeding. And so so the default is actually to be lactose intolerant after infancy. But in at least 4 different human populations, 3 of them in East Africa and 1 of them in Europe, there appeared to have been separate genetic mutations that, and it wasn't on the gene that produces lactase enzyme itself, it was on a regulatory gene that would usually turn off the lactase-producing gene, and it didn't. And so there were populations that kept on producing this enzyme. And the most amazing thing about that is that it wouldn't have been an adaptation unless human populations were practicing dairying cultures.
Right, right.
So, in fact, human culture is really what catalyzed the natural selection for these gene polymorphisms and not the other way around.
The importance of it. That's really, really interesting because it's not like as though they went, hey, you know, I can tolerate dairy, so I think I'll start drinking. It was like everybody was drinking dairy and some people weren't doing well with it. Other people were. So it's really interesting to think about that. Here's what I want to do. I want to take our last commercial break. And when we come back, I want to ask you what you hope other clinicians and scientists take away from your research. Stay tuned.
Sure.
We'll be right back with more Superhuman Radio.
Empress Trigger.
carries over 1,000 of the hottest nutritional supplements, performance enhancers, and nutraceuticals on the planet. And now, Superhuman Radio listeners get an additional 5% off their everyday low prices by using the coupon code SHR5. That's SHR and the number 5. Choose from products like Quest Protein Bars, iForce Nutrition, Iron Mag Labs, and more. Check out Orbit's daily deals for special insane blowout prices. Log on to the Orbit Nutrition Forum and get feedback about the products you're shopping for, and get an additional 5% off using the coupon code SHR5. Orbit Nutrition. Fast, reliable, competitive, international. Why shop anywhere else?
Iron Mag Labs is the leading supplement company offering the most hardcore pro-anabolic supplements. Visit IronMagLabs.com and check out our top-selling products. Asta RX, Halo Extreme, Sinustain RX, E-Control RX, Decadrol Max, Ultramale RX. Iron Mag Labs makes supplements that actually work. No hype, no BS, just real results. There's a reason you keep hearing about Iron Mag Labs. Come see what you're missing. Visit Iron Mag Labs at IronMagLabs.com for the most hardcore bodybuilding supplements.
Power Block dumbbells can replace up to 55 pairs of dumbbells in the space of just one pair, and they come in all sizes to meet the needs of all lifters, as small as 2.5 to 20 pounds per hand, all the way up to 175 pounds per hand, and everything in between. Check out the new Power Block barbells that turn your Power Block dumbbells into barbells in seconds, replacing up to 45 barbells. Or try the new kettlebell handle to convert Power Block dumbbells to kettlebells. Call 800-651-1937 or click the banner ad on SuperhumanRadio.com for a free brochure.
Toothpaste is loaded with toxic chemicals. That's why I use Aura MD. Aura MD is a natural dental care product that is made from botanical oils that promotes healthy oral microbiome while destroying dangerous bacteria that lead to oral health problems. It does not contain fluoride, detergent, surfactants, or any other chemicals. Best of all, it leaves your breath smelling so good people will comment about it. Right now, you can get a buy one, get one free of Aura MD by going to superhumanradio.com and clicking the Aura MD banner ad. I won't ever use anything else but Aura MD, and neither should you.
If you're taking more than one nutritional supplement, stop. Simplify your supplementation with Bio Superfood, the most advanced nutritional whole food you can buy. Even Olympic athletes have discovered Bio Superfood from BioAge.com. You take just one nutritional supplement to help the brain with focus, memory, clarity, and mood. Bio Superfood has zero toxicity. It is safe with no contraindications. Learn more at BioAge.com or call 877-288-9116. Mention Superhuman Radio and get a 10% discount. You can also go to SuperhumanRadio.com and click the BioAge banner ad. Enter promo code SHR for a discount.
Could Altrient supplements be better than a Myers cocktail? Find out for yourself when you try Altrient C and Altrient ME. Using liposomal encapsulated technology, Altrient C's gel delivers up to 200% more vitamin C than pills or powders. The Altrient ME gel provides a high-performance blend of B vitamins and minerals. Make your own Altrient cocktail 100% risk-free. Call 888-437-6353 or order at feelgoodc.com. That's feelgoodc.com. Use coupon code FREE and ask about a free gift with every order you place. Order today at feelgoodc.com or 888-437-6353. Don't forget to mention coupon code FREE to receive your free gift.
Listen strong. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. You know, Bethany, you cleared up a mystery for me your discussion about the in utero preferences that occur as a result of what your mom is exposed to while she's carrying you. Because my mom was on the prototype for all benzodiazepines, Librium, during her pregnancy with me, and that explains why I am so screwed up. So anyway, all right.
I say nothing. I know nothing about the effects of medication.
There you go.
That's not my bag.
Okay. All right. So speaking of your bag, what do you hope that clinicians and, more importantly, the paleo community at large, which is really having and we can't discount the effect that this whole movement has added to the discussion of the role of nutrition and disease. But what do you hope all these individuals take away from your research?
Well, the first thing I would hope that the clinical community would take away is really just starting to expand the notion of what the mechanisms are of human eating patterns and human proclivities and dislikes for different foods. And I'd hope that the paleo community would join clinicians in thinking more broadly about the kind of nutrition interventions that don't involve arguably what have become the foods of privilege. So grass-fed beef, free-range chicken, you know, fish, things like, you know, healthy greens. These things are often completely out of reach of a lot of the populations that are most impacted by poor nutrition, by chronic psychosocial stress. And, you know, really, I mean, I should say, too, my father's an oceanographer. I know all too well just how on the brink of losing so much of the ocean's biodiversity we are from overfishing. So I would hope that, you know, that they would expand what they think of as lean proteins, plant-based
Well,
foods,
give me an example. Expand it to
like
what?
That.
Expand it to what? To factory-farmed beef, you're saying?
No, I would actually say thinking more about, like we talked about earlier, you know, things like nuts and insects and, you know, plant-based proteins, thinking about the types of foods that maybe don't have as much of the cultural cachet as having a chest freezer of venison in your basement,
right,
but really are providing a lot of the same, you know, high omega-3s, you know, high unsaturated fat, low saturated fat. You know, people tend to think of omega-3 fatty acids and the DHA, the type of it that's the most complete,
sure,
as only something you'll find from meat and fish. But really, you know, the human body can synthesize DHA out of some of the sort of precursor forms of these fatty acids.
Right, like linoleic acid and things
exactly.
like that, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and so, you know, I would encourage people to think more broadly about what these nutritional categories include besides the kinds of things that are economically, you know, really only for the privileged and that also are incredibly unsustainable in a world of 7 billion people.
Okay, I have to respectfully say that I agree with you completely that they should expand on what is acceptable as part of the template. At the same time, I think that not necessarily just expanding on what's part of the template, but also working towards changing this paradigm of access. In fact, I'm talking to a group right now about working in one of the most challenged cities in the country, and that's Detroit, where we have a population of very ill people and we have economic conditions that are unbearable. And saying, you know what, the food chain, first of all, the food chain needs to be decentralized. Access would be there if family farms were rewarded for supplying their local neighbors with food. And it's not that expensive, I would say, but it's a long way away. So I agree with you that we have to first expand what is acceptable, with that being the gangplank to changing access for individuals, because I have to tell you, I don't consider myself privileged at all. And I think a lot of the people in my audience would not consider themselves privileged. Now, I agree with you. I am not impoverished and I am not in a situation where I'm stricken by poverty and just survival is all I can do right now. But at the same time, I think that if individuals were given access and explained to that these choices are probably better for you than those, then they can apply their own desires and their own choices to make these decisions. So that's also something that's missing from the equation. That's really missing from the equation as well. So,
I absolutely agree. You know, I believe too that, you know, thinking about the kinds of, you know, if the first thing is incorporating more plants into your diet, then, you know, really the populations that are the most stricken with, you know, what have been labeled the diseases of civilization,
right,
so diabetes and heart disease, you know, they have to have better access and better feasible access to fresh produce and plants. I think, you know, another thing too, and this would be more for clinicians, would be thinking about the human sweet tooth as less a kind of a deep-seated adaptation that, you know, creates these kind of sugar-seeking robots, and more of the sweet tooth as a coping mechanism. You know, really thinking about the fact that narcotics have hijacked that dopaminergic pathway that sugar has, and that, you know, a lot of times sweet foods are not necessarily, you know, your sort of paleolithic self trying to get calories. It's directly making you feel better
right.
when you're having a really bad time of it. And so I think in some ways having, you know, ways to get at these deeper psychosocial patterns of stress would be a really important part of nutrition interventions as well.
Well,
you know,
and
that people are able to make those decisions.
There's another double whammy at work here, and that is that those that live in the most social and economically challenged areas of the country who, granted, have the most difficult time finding good food. You don't see Whole Foods opening up stores in these areas. You don't see Trader Joe's opening up stores in the area. And what's even worse, and I want to opine on this in a second, you don't see the farmers markets going into these areas. And unfortunately, they are exposed to foods. According to Dr. Susan Kleiner, author of The Good Mood Diet, that are so high in omega-6 fats that have been linked to these wild mood swings and periods of anxiety and then what solves their problem? Sugar. It makes them feel good.
So
they're actually eating a diet and living a life that makes them prone to this behavior that then leads them down the road to this. It's a cyclical situation.
Yeah, and the thing that gets that, you know, that I find the most problematic is that so often it's referred to as lifestyle choices,
right.
as if this is somehow a choice that people are making as opposed to coping with these larger structural limitations. And so, you know, I think in some way taking a really broader approach in a clinical sense to what it is that's driving human eating behavior, on a mechanistic level, I think would be really helpful in, creating the kinds of environments where people can make good eating choices.
Right.
And where, you know, they have a more complete ability to eat healthfully.
And we just talked about the effects of stress on magnesium. I mean, you know what? Okay, so the one thing I want to mention here that, and I say this often, and the reason I say it often is because I want this truth to become part of the landscape out there. The USDA has food stamps on their budget because when food stamps were created, they were created in two colors, blue and orange. The orange was supposed to be used to spend with the farmers in the slightly outlying areas of the cities. If we could just get the USDA to go back and make this the way it works again, so that every amount of money that a family gets, they have to spend part of it with the farmers in their areas so that they can acquire those healthy, green, leafy vegetables and so on and so forth, that alone would have a huge impact. The problem is that the modern model of commerce doesn't like that. They want people to walk into Kroger's and spend all their money. They don't want them to have to go to the farmer's market a couple miles away and use those orange. They used to call it throwback money when I was a kid. If the USDA would just do this one thing, it could have a profound impact on health.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, you know, that's something, you know, particularly the listeners who are interested in, you know, the paleo diet and really thinking about food in a larger systemic way. You know, there's so much of our food system that is beyond the control of the individual. And, you know, really thinking about agricultural policies,
yes.
farm bills, you know, who's getting agricultural subsidies and for what and who's not getting them, I think would be a really good way to kind of push the narrative so that people are really thinking about the ways in which being a locavore, so to speak, it becomes, you know, feasible. And I've been trying to find on, you know, my computer right here the news headline that I read about a few weeks ago with a major city that's actually giving out or that's giving out coupons
health
to
bucks.
People.
Healthy
for,
bucks. It's New York. Healthy bucks.
It.
They're giving away healthy
exactly,
bucks.
Exactly.
Yeah.
New York.
Yeah,
yep.
we did that story last Friday. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, and so the kind of investment in that, you know, healthy eating access as a way to cut down just the staggering burden, financial burden of, you know, non-infectious chronic diseases in the country, I would think would be a really big part of that.
You,
want
to hear something sad about that? We reported on this last Friday on Casual Friday. Elisa Profumo delivered the story. One of the government agencies, I don't know if it was the USDA, but it may have been the FDA. Well, the FDA came out and said that they could not call it Healthy Bucks because it should not be implied that any food can impact health. Otherwise, food is a unregistered drug. A new and unregistered drug, and the USDA came out and said that you shouldn't do this. This is a bad idea with New York doing the Healthy Bucks, because people should be able to spend their money wherever they want, and they shouldn't have to be made to think that the decisions that they make about food are somehow healthy or unhealthy. And I wanted to bang my head in the wall when I heard that. I was like,
yeah,
"Are you
yeah,
joking?"
I find that line of thinking fascinating, frankly.
Well, but you have to remember that these are two organizations that have relationships with the largest agricultural companies in the world, and their duty is to protect their clients. You and I are not their clients. But anyway, that's a discussion I don't want to bring you into. I want to thank you so much for coming on and talking about this. I think it's a very, very important discussion, and anytime we have an opportunity to further the discussion on the linkage between diet and health, it's an important discussion. So thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
Take care. Okay, and also thank you to Adele Musa for coming on during the first hour and performing the Subversity Science Roundup. Don't forget to visit subversity.com. And, of course, tomorrow's Friday when I will be in the studio with the lovely and talented Elisa Profumo, and we will perform Casual Friday. See you then.
You're listening to the Superhuman Channel. We're ripped and we're ready.